Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Glenn Wexler, and you're listening to Pantheon Podcast.
History in five songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Hello once again, Martin Popoff here, back with another episode of History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcasts. We are pleased, as always, to be part of this fast and always expanding Pantheon Podcast Network. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon Music, and over 40 other podcast platforms. All right, this is episode 206. I'm calling this Bands That Went New Wave. Now, this is a little different than, I don't think I ever did the whole episode on bands that went disco. Maybe I did. I think we have something on keyboards, bands that added keyboards. I think, you know, we definitely have something on electronic drums. This is a little bit different than that. It will take into some of those things, but this is more the idea of, and we're going to look at this a little over time, and I've got some categories as usual. This is more like bands that... That went new wavy, and I, you know, in the true spirit of this, I wished I would have been able to make a whole episode of the late 70s, because that's when, you know, first we get punk, then we get new wave, we get baby bands being new wave, but we do get some of these bands trying new wave. But what I found interesting about this episode is that I couldn't think of any examples of bands that actually went punk. That's pretty interesting, right? I mean, there was a lot of hype for punk, especially over in the UK, New York City, blah, blah, blah. Essentially, the big year for punk was 1977. That's when all the albums came out. It already started to fade by 1978. But it's interesting that no bands actually tried to go punk. Not that I can think of. Let us know on the Facebook page if you can think of anybody. You know, I know there were the odd... you know, heavy metal band, like very, let's just like nascent early examples, but there are likely, I can't think of them off the top of my head, but a few like new wave of British heavy metal bands that might have started like more of a punk band, because generally you would start, you know, in 77, 78 if you were going to become a new wave of British heavy metal band. But yeah, kind of interesting that there is none of that there. And there's really no punk here, but I do have some excellent examples of new wave here. And I think we've caught a lot of, this is going to be kind of like a rich thing, looking at a lot of different disciplines. So let's play the first track and we shall discuss. This is Queen with Staying Power.
See what I got. I got a hell of a lot. Tell me what you feel.
All right, so this is from 1982's Hot Space. Queen is an interesting example. I'm loosely calling this category classic rock bands. So this kind of goes back to the beginnings, and it goes back to what I would have wanted this whole episode to be. But I found enough to add some other things. So the interesting thing about this Hot Space album is that it's dancey, it's disco, it's electronic, it's futuristic. So it's that kind of new wave. But it is also... the kind of new wave that I wanted for this is, it is kind of herky-jerky as well. So it's got a little bit of that going to it. You don't hear an affected new wave vocal out of Freddie or anything like that. And the other interesting thing about including Queen in this is that the previous album doesn't, you know, the game doesn't really have any new wave isms. It's got, you know, some weirdness with Crazy Little Thing Called Love and Another One Bites the Dust. You've got disco and you've got rockabilly and you've got a little bit of modernity added to it, but this is the album where it goes crazy. And the other thing that's interesting about Queen is that they do have the song Sheer Heart Attack on News of the World, 1977, and that's ostensibly the idea of responding to punk. And so you could say Queen went punk for one song, and they absolutely did an amazing job of it, because that is a super powerful, punky, energetic song. It's like better than punk. It's like them doing punk and then just being better at it. But they only do it for one song, and it is a little bit of a lark, and it's definitely a departure because it's one of their most raw and seething and energetic songs. So that's kind of cool, and an interesting one that kind of aligns up a little bit with that is Led Zeppelin's Wearing and Tearing, right? Because that so that comes on Coda. It's a non-LP track, so it's on the Rarities album Coda. But it was recorded during the In Through the Outdoor sessions, and it's kind of their response to punk. Jimmy Page was enamored with the energy of the Damned. There's that famous quote. So it's almost like their Sheer Heart Attack song, this Wearing and Tearing song. And it is a good rock and raucous, heavy song. Also interesting along those lines is something like the Rolling Stones' Shattered. So Rolling Stones, they essentially went through that great period where they were like a really big band again. Trying disco, but essentially being the Rolling Stones. But Shattered definitely stands out like a sore thumb as them trying to do something new wavy. It is very quirky and new wavy, and this is them, inspired by that whole New York scene. It's, 1978, Some Girls album. So that's kind of cool. What else do we got? You could almost say that Black Sabbath, Never Say Die, the song Never Say Die, seems like a bit of a punky song. But Black Sabbath brings up an interesting point. There's a lot of bands that didn't try anything really new wavy. I don't think, you could never say Aerosmith tried anything new wavy, Ted Nugent. So, it's not like every band kind of did this, but I thought that song kind of always stood out. I remember when I was hearing it in 78 thinking, oh, this is Black Sabbath's punk song. Kiss is an interesting example. You could think that the Unmasked album is them getting a little new wavy. And I think it is. I think what you get as as almost like a signal about the new waviness when a band tries this is the tightening of the clothes, like the toning it down on the costumes, the cutting the hair. They didn't have long hair, they didn't have short hair, and didn't look very good. But you could say that Unmasked definitely has a little bit of a new wave feel. It's a little bit in the abstract of the philosophy of the production, the tighter production, the less bassiness, boominess on the drums, making everything sound claustrophobic and again a little herky jerky. So this is that sort of new wave thing. It's not really punky. It's even got a song in there called She's So European. But no, I don't think Dynasty, which is 79, is particularly new wavy in any way. But I think you do get that by the time you get to Unmasked a little bit. So they're moving up in the years past the sort of new wave thing. This is 1980 at this point. Did Billy Joel go a little new wavy? I've had it suggested that, you could signal a new waviness in changing your name a little bit. So Bay City Rollers become the Rollers. But that album is not very new wavy. Strangers in the Wind, 78. Jefferson Starship, you could definitely say they went pretty new wave on Modern Times in 81. Electric Light Orchestra, definitely. I think, on the Time album, you've got things like Yours Truly, 2095, and From the End of the World, or Here's the News, where they sound like almost like an extreme version of Devo. So you could say they definitely went kind of new wavy. Also in the classic rock category, think of something like Lindsey Buckingham for the Law and Order album in 1981, Go Insane 84, and even that was sort of echoed a little bit by the likes of Fleetwood Mac on Tusk, right? So that was considered their stripped back, a little bit caveman-y, a little bit new wavy album. It was a little bit their response to being this mass, why would you want to change your sound anyways? But anyways, they do this double album, which is a little obscure, and it's got some experimental things on it. And I think that was kind of their, embracing of this new music, this new creativity, trying to be a little bit fresh and not be the classic rock band, again, that had these two massive, massive albums in Fleetwood Mac and Rumors, right? So there you go. That's the category, classic rock bands. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month, so just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
All right, back again here on History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, episode 206, Bands That Went New Wave. The category this time for number two, let's take a listen first of all. This is T's with That Kind of Girl. Okay, so the category here is baby bands. T's is a great example, one of the rare examples, and they're one of the better examples, I would say, of this whole thing. So T's is this great Canadian hard rock band. They've got the self-titled debut. They got On the Loose. They got the Tour of Japan, one of the heaviest albums of the 70s, like a good heavy rocking album. Then, you know, the next one's a little experimental, One Night Stands. But then they do this... this last album they ever did, it ruined the band, Body Shots. So they have this Body Shots album that comes out, and literally this sounds like the work of a different band. It's definitely really herky-jerky. Brian Danter is adopting an artistic British sort of voice. All the percussion is kind of like clustered and clumpy, as you can hear on this song. So yeah, this Body Shots album is one of the rare examples, definitely, of a classic rock band. And this time, time, a really pronounced classic rock band who's actually a nascent, you know, essentially a heavy metal band, right? A hard rock band tease, going this direction. And, you know, I remember talking to the guys, I interviewed all four of the guys over the years, and they talked about what a disaster this is. You know, they had in like a clothing consultant who was making them wear new wavy clothes, and then the band, of course, is sounding super new wavy. So yeah, it just killed the band. It was just an absolute identity changer. You know, Stars. We could think about Stars with the likes of Attention Shoppers. So this is another band, put out two albums, sound like the Tease albums, right? Good, solid, you know, American meat and potatoes. Tease is Canadian, of course, from Windsor. But, you know, hard rock. So you got Stars, you got Violation. And then they do this Attention Shoppers album, which is very mellow. So this is a kind of new wave. I went through the whole thing to prepare for this episode again. And it's more the kind of new wave that is a stripped back sound, but it's not herky jerky and punky new wave. It's not like English new wave, but it's more like the idea of when you're adopting certain 60s pop tropes and maybe even girl group tropes. So a little bit of traditionalism. So it's a little bit of the East Coast American new wave feel. You know, you think of bands like the Romantics, who are like a retro band, right? In effect, Southside Johnny, Mink DeVille's kind of slash, you know, retro slash new wave a little bit. So yeah, Stars, I think you can hear that in the song She. But even so this is funny that the one of the two heaviest songs on it is called X-Ray Specs, which is the name of a new wave band, but it even has a little bit of a new wave vibe to it as well. It's kind of got this surging up-tempo feel. So, well, a punky, so almost like a punky vibe to that one, even though it's a heavy one. But yeah, think of any way that you want it. I'll be there waiting on you. Definitely pop. And, you know, they have they put aside kind of the black leather clothes, and now they're just dressed in you know, standard new wave poppy mainstream clothes. So that's that one. Derringer, I think you could say, arguably went new wave between the likes of the classic Sweet Evil album. And then the 78 album, If I Weren't So Romantic, I'd Shoot You. So in a sense, I think I've even done a whole episode on these bands getting mellow and poppy. But, you know, Monomania, there's some sound effects on there. I love the album, but you could say it gets a little bit new wavy. We've got the great example of The Boys. So this is like a Southern biker rock and rollin' band, a 1978 album called Too Wild to Tame. They actually, like the Bay City Rollers, changed their name to The Biz. So B'ZZ. And it gets kind of poppier, a little more new wave, a little more mainstream. It's not particularly new wavy, but you definitely feel that pronounced change. And they've got, you know, the album cover's kind of like this... you know, looks like a bee. So it's brighter colored. And the first one, it's like you're in a Wild West town and there's bikes and bikers everywhere. I mean, it's a really mean looking sort of album. I almost feel like The Gods go a little bit new wave between, you know, the classic debut album to the Nothing is Sacred album. The Nothing is Sacred album looks totally mean and metal. It's bikers, smoke, but it's a little bit, again, in that sort of retro feel of being new wave. Band nobody's gonna heard of, but one of the first bands, well, the first band I ever saw live, they were amazing. They looked like rock gods to us. The Carroll Brothers from BC. But their singles were heavy. They were heavy live. It looked amazing, right? They came through our little town of Trail, BC. But they had a self-titled debut. Unfortunately, it was a disappointment. It wasn't very heavy, but it definitely wasn't new wave. But you get to the second album, Baby Get Down, and again, they're cutting their hair and they're sounding a little new wave. So that's a little one. That's one that's a little bit like the Tease example that you know, kind of lines up really good. You've got Utopia, Todd Rundgren. It's not exactly baby bands, but yeah, Todd Rundgren was really futuristic. He went kind of new wavy. You know, again, maybe a little more in the classic rock. Should have put these in the previous example. So the classic rock, you've got Neil Young with the likes of Trans, 1983, with We Are In Control, Computer Age. He said it was influenced by Kraftwerk. There's a lot of electronics on it. Atomic Rooster, Headline News. You could say they went kind of new wave, June 83. David Bowie. So here's an interesting one. You know, this is someone who comes out of a traditional music making, even though, you know, the look and all that, Ziggy Stardust, blah, 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 Aladdin Insane, but very traditional musically. But when they go into the Berlin period with Iggy Pop, You could say that David Bowie goes new wave and kind of invents the new wave. I mean, he's very important in terms of inventing. He'd be a huge influence on bands that called themselves new wave and punk, but he's not punk, but the punk bands would call him an influence, but definitely super influence on what became new wave, post-punk, new romantics later on, all that kind of stuff. But those albums, you could say that he kind of went new wave. Another one in the classic rock category, just to show you that bands essentially didn't go new wave, but they would try something once in a while, is like the likes of ZZ Top with like Groovy Little Hippie Pad, right? So that's definitely a new wavy song on El Loco. I don't particularly think Eliminator counts for any of this. But yeah, they do a couple of quirky things here and there. And this comes from Billy Gibbons, and his travels in Europe and being sort of inspired by this stuff. Interesting, in the baby band category, you can think of a band, and there's funny, there's not a lot of examples of this, but you could say that the Boomtown Rats are a punk band that went new wave, because squarely, Tonic for the Troops is a new wave album, and Fine Art of Surfacing is a new wave album, but the Boomtown Rats, is definitely a punk album. And some of those other bands went kind of mellow in some various directions. You could loosely call it new wave, but I think Tonic for the Troops is the best example of this sort of thing. Okay, so that's your baby bands category. Take a listen to this, our third selection. This is Genesis with Abacab. Okay, so our category here is prog bands. What prog bands went new wave? And again, I don't think all of them did. I don't think you could ever say Yes went new wave. You know, even though you've got Tormato with the shorter songs and you've got some Buggles guys joining him for Drama, but Drama's just a good prog album, right? And I don't think 90125, oh, whatever it is, or Big Generator, I don't think any of those are particularly new wavy. But Genesis, definitely, this is an example of a band that was super successful with it, because this is when they got really big. So they went from almost the purest progressive rock band you can possibly imagine to being very much about synthesizers and electronic drums, or gated drums, treated drums. Love this album to death, but it's very new wavy. You think of Keep It Dark, and especially Who Done It With, which annoyed a lot of people. But even Duke, you see it starting up, and then later on, they're like the prog rock Devo when you get to the Genesis album and We Can't Dance, stuff like that. So yeah, they're definitely an example of a band that went new wave. Jethro Tull, you think of even, Broadsword and the Beast is a funny one because you think of that cover. It's the most progressive rock cover you can imagine. But they're starting to go new wave there. They definitely go a lot more in that direction, as time goes on. You think of the Under Wraps album, Under Wraps, the song Under Wraps, Lap of Luxury. We're up into 1984. I don't really want to talk about that because that's sort of a different category here. But Renaissance. You think Renaissance, big change from 1979's Azure Door. When you get to Camera Camera, 1981, they become a full-fledged new wave band. So a lot of electronic percussion and herky-jerkiness and rigid rhythms, kind of dancey rhythms. We're thinking that kind of new wave. Definitely. King Crimson, great example of this, of a band that goes new wave. So essentially, they are this big, serious prog band. They end way back in 1974 with Red, but they take the time off, and Robert Fripp goes away, and he's inspired by New York and all this, and you've got Exposure, that great album, and all that, Frippinino stuff in there, Evening Star and all that kind of thing. But when they come back, they are really inspired by herky-jerky post-punk sort of rhythms, You've got Tony Levin in there. Adrian Belew comes in as this nerdy kind of freaky guy who's, you know, came from Frank Zappa's band, and he makes a lot of quirky new wavy noise. This is almost like more post-punk than new wave because it's such a radical new wave sound. But you also get, you know, that effect of, you know, the Talking Heads. So this is all, you know, Daryl Hall, this whole New York sort of scene going on. So basically King Crimson comes back and gives you radical, radical albums in Discipline in 1980 and Beat in 1981 and Three of a Perfect Pair. Is it 83, 84? Anyway, so those three. So you get the red, blue, and yellow period of King Crimson. Very, very new wavy for a progressive rock band. Styx, Kilroy is here. Definitely this is a quasi-prog pop punk rock band, whatever you want to call them, classic rock band, that when you arrive at this album, it's got electronic drums. You think of Mr. Roboto, very new wavy with the synth sounds and the treated, you know, the vocal on it. So this is, it's a concept album, but it's very tight rhythmically. The bass is kind of like cloistered and pent up new wave bass on here. I definitely don't like the album at all. You can see the recent Contrarians episode we did on that, and I give it a 0 out of 10. Hawkwind, interesting example. So here you have a quasi, well, space rock, hard rock, semi-heavy metal, semi-prog, semi-ambient. You know, Hawkwind's hard to describe to their credit. But you get up to Quirk, Strangeness, and Charm, and I think that's definitely a new wave song, and you get kind of a new wave Devo-ish vocal on it. It's got a very conservative Hypnosis album cover, but I think it's kind of new wavy. And then, you know, 1978, they morph into Hawk Lords, which you could say is a little bit of a new wavy thing. So yeah, they kind of go through a bit of a new wave period. And, you know, anybody who was that big and that exploratory in electronic sounds and synthesizers, it's going to feel new wavy anyways. But they definitely kind of push in that direction a little bit and give you a little bit of that as well at that point. Okay, let's go on to our fourth selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Alice Cooper with Aspirin Damage. I got a load of tension, burning up my neck. Something's wrong with my suspension, so pass those tablets to this wreck. All right, so this is Alice Cooper from the great Flush the Fashion album. This is the category here is the very, very, very best example of for this entire episode. Alice Cooper is absolutely the best example. Who would have thought it, right? But, you know, you get this guy who's coming out of this. So he's been a solo artist for four or five albums at this point. Very traditional music on From the Inside and Goes to Hell and Lace and Whiskey. Just basically... ballads, semi-rock, fooling around, general classic rock made with general traditional instruments, right? But you get to this album, you know, this is entering the blackout years, as they call them, the dark years where he's drinking a lot, he's doing crack cocaine, he's hallucinating, he almost dies, he goes down to like 100 pounds or whatever. But basically you get the Flush the Fashion album, Special Forces, Zipper Catches Skin, and Dada. These albums that don't sell very well, he's still on Warner, but they are very quirky and new wavy. He cuts his hair, he's got kind of a punk rock look. Well, yeah, that's true. It's more of a punk rock look that he has through this period than even new wave. But the albums are very new wave, very herky-jerky, very quirky with the lyrics. He even adopts a new wave vocal. Man, this is the perfect example. If that Tease album, you know, because that's an obscure small band example, and it's even that isn't as convincing as Alice Cooper here. So here's a guy who totally becomes a new wave artist, and he does it for four albums, right? But then, yeah, he goes away. He has to clean up because he almost dies, and he comes back as almost like a slasher rock, horror, hair metal rocker guy again for the likes of Constrictor and Raise Your Fist and Yell. So at that point, he comes back. He's just a mainstream Sunset Strip kind of rocker. So he's completely put that whole thing aside. But yeah, here you go. Definitely, definitely best example. All right, so let's move on to our number five track here. Take a listen to this. This is Blue Oyster Cult with Veins. Okay, so the category here is moving on into the 80s. So this is a temporal moving on, and we're getting a little bit into dangerous terrain of hopefully not overlapping with other episodes. But the idea here is becoming bands that become new wave, but now we're not talking 78, 79 new wave. Actually, there's one other funny thing I wanted to mention about a baby band. You know, put this in the Boomtown Rats category. The Cars is a funny one, right? So the Cars are almost credited with creating this new wave sound or being very successful in it, right? With that debut album. But the funny thing about the Cars is that they're a new wave band that's kind of hard rocky and using traditional instruments on that debut. And they become even more new wavy when you get to Candio and Panorama and Door to Door and all those. So at that point, they actually create a certain kind of new wave that's a new wave of traditional instruments and become this even more Devo-ish, mainstream-ish, mind you, but mainstream Devo-ish sort of new wave band. So what made me think of that is Blue Oyster Cult is a really cool example, because as you hear in this Veins song, so you're hearing a modern version of new wave. You could say we're now into synth pop new wave, new romantics new wave, Duran Duran, you know, whatever, a bunch of those sorts of bands. But the funny thing about Blue Oyster Cult that's interesting in this new wave trajectory is you could go back to 1981's Fire of Unknown Origin and hear a little bit of new waviness in the song Fire of Unknown Origin, After Dark. Like I've often said that those songs reminded me of the Stranglers a little bit, right? And one of the main reasons I think that way is because you move from Alan Lanier as a barrel house honky-tonk boogie-woogie piano player to a synthesizer player, right? So that album, you get this modernity to it, which is synthesizer. So that sort of signifies new wave. Now, when you get to Veins, we're up into 1983 and the Revolution by Night. Now you've got electronic drums. You've got very techie, new wavy production. So this is like them being a different kind of new wave. So just a couple others into this category of later years. I think Iggy Pop, for example, you could say he's always kind of been a new wave artist, like post-Stooges, but I think he gets into an even more new wavy sort of feel when you get to Zombie Birdhouse, because it's a little more artsy. Rush, of course, is a famous one that you could say they go new wavy, influenced by Geddy getting into keyboards, influenced by Neil Peart being inspired by Stuart Copeland, so they get a little Police-y. But as time goes on, you get Signals, which has a lot of keyboards, and then they get really keyboardy at the percussion end. And by the time you get to Power Windows and Hold Your Fire, you could say, generally what you say is that they've become quite keyboardy, but you could also say that they've become quite new wavy. So, you know, even though Blue Oyster Cult adopts 80s production tropes and keyboard sounds and drum sounds across the likes of Revolution by Night and Club Ninja, they're still essentially writing Blue Oyster Culty music. It's just got some 80s sounds, but Rush really kind of does go new wave. And in the department of bands like Blue Oyster Cult, who really don't change in the writing very much, you've got the likes of Molly Hatchet and Blackfoot, you know, the famous, 38 Special, the famous trope of these Southern rock bands trying this and falling flat on their face because it just doesn't line up with big bellies and big beards and, belt buckles and jeans doing this kind of new wavy poppy thing. But those bands kind of do it. Robert Plant's a kind of an interesting example. So he goes from basically a classic rock artist on, the Principle of Moments and Pictures at 11, the earlier one, you get to Shaken and Stirred, and it's a very new wavy album. And it's not even that he's keyboard tropey new wavy, it's just he's just really creative and strange and new wavy. So that's kind of an interesting one. So there you go. That's our last category. So this is us moving into the 80s. There are many, many examples of this version of new wave as well, but I think we covered a lot of good bases there. I want to just mention the last episode, Triple Crown Rockers. There was some really good input after the fact on Facebook of people pointing out some that actually fit that. Remember, the idea was name some rockers or some rock stars, some individuals who have been on three classic albums by three different bands. And I thought there were a couple examples that came up that I thought were even better than my honorable mentions or could have been actual examples. And those would be the likes of Bob Daisley on Rainbow Long Live Rock and Roll, Diary of a Madman, and of course the second one, and Uriah Heep Abominog. So I think all those albums are absolutely classic. And I like him in there. He's not a side guy. He's a writer. He's an important guy, because I didn't want to put side guys in. There's people like Don Airey that I don't really include in this. Bill Bruford definitely, I think, fits as well. You could pick Yes, Close to the Edge, King Crimson Red, and the UK album, the first UK album. I think all of those are classic. So he's like our best example of a prog rock guy who is a triple crown rocker. And Bruce Dickinson, I think, fits as well. Other people disagreed with me because they don't think Samson Shock Tactics is a classic. I totally do. So you could pick Shock Tactics, pick any Iron Maiden album. I'll go with Peace of Mind. And most people agree that The Chemical Wedding is an absolute classic, maybe better than almost every single Iron Maiden album. So Bruce Dickinson, welcome to the Triple Crown Rockers crowd. If you like this episode and this show and want to support future episodes, go to ko-fi.com/MartinPopoff. This is my main way of supporting this thing. It's just a simple PayPal. Hit the $3 button. You know, sometimes people double it, triple it, or whatever. But very, very nice and easy to use way to support the show. This week, I would like to thank Andy at Black Sugar Transmission. Again, he's part of my the new Cure book that I have out right now. You can check that out, a panel book where we go through every Cure studio album. You go to martinpopoff.com for that. He says some really good stuff in there. He's a super deep thinker on these bands, and he especially loves the Cure. Like, great stuff on Disintegration and stuff like that. So Andy, of course, he's in KMFDM and Blondie and all that as well. So he's a definite bona fide rock star as well. Kevin Donaldson as well. Thank you very much. David Fisher, John Lilly, Augustin Garcia de Paredes, Steve Pilleri, John Stuckey, and William Walker. Thank you all very much. Again, you can go to martinpopoff.com for all your book needs. The other recent books are the big, nice, expensive coffee table books. We've got the Pink Floyd, the AC/DC, and the David Bowie. Got all of those in stock. So there you go. Go take a listen to this stuff. Let me know if you can think of any other bands that went new wave, any better examples than Alice Cooper or Tease, frankly. And it'd be nice to know if you can think of anybody who went punk. There you go. Go play some Blackout era Alice Cooper. That's your homework.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at RNR Archaeology.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.